Division Switzerland, Germany. Chapter 2. Papal Temptations. The Reformation had gained the day. It was now to accelerate its conquests. After his Battle of Zurich, in which the most skillful champions of the papacy were dumb, who were bold enough to oppose the new doctrine? But weapons of a different kind were tried. Zwingli's firmness and republican bearing overawed his adversaries. Accordingly, they had recourse to peculiar measures to subdue him. While Rome was pursuing Luther with her anathemas, she endeavored to win over the reformer of Zurich by gentleness. The dispute was scarcely ended when Zwingli received a visit from the captain of the Pope's guard, the son of the burgomaster Roust. He was accompanied by the legate Aincius, the bearer of a papal brief, in which Adrian VI called Zwingli his beloved son and assured him of his special favor. At the same time, the Pope urged Zinc to gain over Zwingli. "And what has the Pope commissioned you to offer him?" asked Oswald Myconius.
"Everything," replied Zinc,
"except the papal chair. There was no mitre or crozier or cardinal's hat that the Pope would not have given to bribe the reformer of Zurich. But Rome was strangely mistaken in this respect. All her proposals were unavailing. In Zwingli, the Romish Church had a still more pitiless enemy than Luther. He cared far less than the Saxon reformer for the ideas and ceremonies of former ages. It was enough for him that any custom, however innocent in itself, was connected with some abuse. He fell violently upon it. The word of God, thought he, should stand alone. But if Rome understands so imperfectly what was then taking place in Christendom, she found counselors who endeavored to put her in the way. Faber, exasperated at seeing the Pope thus humble himself before his adversary, hastened to enlighten him. He was a courtier with a constant smile upon his lips and honeyed words in his mouth. To judge from his own language, he was everybody's friend, even of those whom he accused of heresy. But his hatred was mortal. Accordingly, the reformer, playing on his name, Faber, used to say, "The vicar of Constance is a lie smith. Let him openly take up arms and see how Christ defends us." These words were no mere idle boasting, for while the Pope was complimenting Zwingli on his eminent virtues and the special confidence he placed in him, the enemies of the reformer were increasing in number throughout Switzerland. The veteran soldiers, the great families, the herdsmen of the mountains, combined their hatred against this doctrine which thwarted their tastes. At Lucerne, the magnificent representation of Zwingli's passion was announced. In effect, the people dragged the reformer's effigy to the scaffold, shouting out that they were going to put the heretic to death, and laying hands on some Zurichers who happened to be at Lucerne, compelled them to be spectators of this mock execution. "They shall not trouble my repose," said Zwingli. "Christ will never be wanting to his followers." Even the Diet re-echoed with threats against him. "My dear confederates," said the counselor of Mullingen to the cantons, "make a timely resistance to the Lutheran cause. At Zurich a man is no longer master in his own house." This agitation among the enemy announced what was passing in Zurich more loudly than any proclamations could have done. The victory was indeed bearing fruit. The conquerors were gradually taking possession of the country, and every day the gospel made fresh progress. 24 canons and a great number of chaplains voluntarily petitioned the council to reform their statutes. It was decided to replace these sluggish priests by pious and learned men, with commission to give the Zurich youth a Christian and liberal education, and to establish in the place of their Vespers and Latin Masses a daily explanation of a chapter in the Bible, according to the Hebrew and Greek texts, first for the learned, and afterwards for the people. There are unfortunately in every army a number of those desperate heroes who leave their ranks and make unseasonable attacks on points that ought still to be respected. A young priest, Louis Hetzer, had published a treatise in German entitled The Judgment of God Against Images, which produced a great sensation, and the images wholly engrossed the thoughts of a part of the people. It is only to the detriment of those essentials that ought to occupy his mind that man can fix his attention on secondary 974 matters. At a place called Stadelhofen, outside the city gates, stood a crucifix elaborately carved and richly ornamented. The most zealous partisans of the Reformation, shocked at the superstitions to which this image gave rise, could not pass by without giving vent to their indignation. "A citizen named Claude Hottinger, a worthy man," says Bullinger, "and well read in the Holy Scriptures, having fallen in with the miller of Stadelhofen, to whom the crucifix belonged, asked him when he intended to throw down his idols. 'No one compels you to worship them,' replied the miller. 'But do you not know
retorted Hottinger, that the word of God forbids us to have any graven images?
Well then, said the miller, if you are authorized to remove them, I abandon them to you.
Hottinger thought himself empowered to act, and shortly after, about the end of September, he was seen to pass the gates with a body of citizens. On arriving at the crucifix, they deliberately dug round it, until the image, yielding to their efforts, fell to the earth with a loud crash. This daring action spread dismay on every side. One might have thought that religion itself had fallen with the crucifix of Stadelhofen.
They are guilty of sacrilege. They deserve to be put to death, exclaimed the friends of Rome.
The council caused the image breakers to be apprehended.
No,
cried Zwingli and his colleagues from their pulpits. Hottinger and his friends are not guilty in the sight of God and worthy of death, but they may be punished for having acted with violence and without the sanction of the magistrates. Meantime, acts of a similar nature were continually taking place. A curate of St. Peter's, one day remarking in front of the church a number of poor people ill-fed and with tattered garments, said to one of his colleagues, as he turned his eyes on the costly ornaments of the saints, I should like to strip these idols of wood to procure clothing for these poor members of Jesus Christ. A few days later, at 3 o'clock in the morning, the saints and all their ornaments disappeared. The council flung the curate into prison, notwithstanding he protested his innocence of this proceeding.
What? Exclaimed the people. Is it these logs of wood that Jesus ordered us to clothe? Is it on account of these images that he will say to the righteous, I was naked, and ye clothed me?
Thus, the greater the resistance, the higher soared the Reformation, and the more it was compressed, the more energetically did it spring forward, and threatened to overthrow all that withstood it.